Studio 1 in Berlin. Dort, wo Knowledge auf Entertainment trifft. Wo sich Kulturgrößen und Szenekenner über den heißesten Scheiß austauschen. Größer als der Hype. Realer als die Realität. Genau dort steht auch ein kleines Studio 2. Und von hier kommt die neue Ausgabe von Oh Schuhen, der Sneaker-Podcast mit Simon Buß und Amadeus Thühner.
Schönen guten Tag und herzlich willkommen zur 88. Episode vom Oh Schuhen Podcast mit mir, Amadeus Thühner, und endlich zurück aus den Ferien vom Ponyhof, Simon Buß, mein Lieber. Schön, dich wieder zu sehen in gut gebräunter Darstellung, hätte ich fast gesagt. Auf jeden Fall vielleicht auch mit einer leichten Cuba Libre-Abhängigkeit und gesammelten Schirmchen aus irgendwelchen Cocktails. Würde ich jetzt mutmaßen, aber erzähl mal, wie war der Urlaub?
Ungesehen ziemlich viele Treffer gelandet, aber
wusste ich.
So kann man es erstmal beschreiben. Der Urlaub war fantastisch. Ich mag Sommerferien so gerne. Ich habe, muss man ja ehrlich sagen, also die Ferien, in Anführungsstrichen, in denen ich jetzt die Cocktailschirmchen gesammelt habe, waren die letzten Wochen gewesen, in denen ich mit meiner Freundin in Griechenland weilte und zum ersten Mal in meinem Leben einen All-Inclusive-Urlaub gemacht hat. Man tut das ja immer so ab, da hat man so ein Armband und es ist wahrscheinlich nicht Instagrammable und ganz viele Leute trinken und reservieren mit Handtüchern liegen.
Und ja, ganz genau so ist es.
Irgendwie schon, aber viel weniger stillos, als es klingt. Und wir hatten so ein schönes Resort auf Korfu gebucht, wo halt überall so ganz viele kleine Bungalows waren und alles sehr grün war, mit viel Olivenhainen bewachsen. Und man ist da so durchschlawenzelt, hatte seinen Strand, zu dem man gehen konnte, der zum Hotel gehört hat. Oder man hatte mehrere Pools zur Auswahl und an jeder Ecke auch irgendwie eine Bar zur Auswahl, an der man dann in Ruhe sich seine Drinks abholen konnte. Kulinarisch gesehen war es fantastisch. Die hatten richtig gute Küche, richtig gutes Essen, abwechslungsreich. Alles toll. Wir haben sehr gut gegessen. Die Drinks waren fantastisch. Wir haben sehr gut getrunken. Die Betten waren gut. Wir haben sehr gut geschlafen und sind nicht nur so in diesem Resort verblieben, sondern haben uns mal einen Tag ein Boot gemietet und sind irgendwie durchs Ionische Meer geschippert, wo man sich echt sagen muss, so, das finde ich ist eine ganz interessante Geschichte. Ich weiß nicht, ob ich überhaupt dazu berechtigt war, ein Motorboot in dieser Größe und mit dieser Leistung zu fahren.
Ich mutmaße aber ehrlicherweise anhand der Videos und Fotos, nein.
Der Kunde ist König. Wer zahlt, hat Recht, also durfte ich fahren. Und das Gleiche gilt für das Quad, was wir uns gemietet hatten. Ich bin es gewohnt, dass ich in Deutschland mit meinem Führerschein, den ich habe, und das ist halt dieser sehr ganz standardmäßige Autoführerschein, wo man noch ein bisschen Roller mitfahren darf, also 50 Kubik, dass ich auch ein 50 Kubik Quad fahren darf. Dort bin ich ein 450 Kubik Quad gefahren, was lauter war als jeden Motor, den ich sonst in meinem Leben gefahren bin. Das Ding hat, sagen wir so, AMG GT war vielleicht ein kleines bisschen lauter, aber das Ding war sackenlaut, richtig schnell, hat einen Zug drauf gehabt und hat Spaß gemacht. Und ja, mit sowas sind wir dann auch ein bisschen über die Insel gefahren und hatten sehr, sehr, sehr viel Spaß
dabei. Richtiger Wellness-Urlaub, glaube ich, oder?
Absolut. Mit ein bisschen Benzingeruch und ein, zwei Bierchen in der Birne ist das ein totaler Brand. Nee, war super entspannt. Und die Sommerferien waren bei mir noch ein Stück länger. Ich habe ja auch vorher schon Podcast-Sommerferien gehabt, in denen du ja dann in den vergangenen Wochen fantastisch mit Fabian zu New Balance überbrückt hast und zuvor schon mit Rafa von Sneakers and Stuff eine Episode gemacht hast. Das war so die Endspurtwochen für mich im Büro. Da war dann die volle Konzentration auf mein Team, auf meine Aufgaben und eine gute Übergabe zu machen. Und das war auch sehr, sehr schön vorm Urlaub, weil ich gut durchgekommen bin, gut rausgekommen bin, jetzt mega entspannt bin, noch ein paar letzte Sonnenstrahlen auf der heimischen Terrasse genieße, bevor es dann in ein paar Tagen weitergeht. Und ja, ich freue mich schon sehr darauf, wieder zurückzukehren.
Kurzer Schwenk noch zurück zum Urlaub. Was für Turnschuhe nimmt denn der Simon Buß in den Urlaub mit?
Für jemanden, der einen Sneaker-Podcast hat, werde ich jetzt sehr schlecht aussehen.
Okay, wow, jetzt bin ich gespannt.
Ich habe ein paar feste Schuhe mitgehabt und es war ein paar Vans Era, ganz klassisch.
Ja, aber fair, einfach Sommer halt.
Schwarze Vans Era. Dafür hatte ich aber drei unterschiedliche Farben der Adilette dabei und konnte da regelmäßig wechseln und auch ganz klar, so die einfachen Strandlatschen, die etwas schickere Poollatsche und vielleicht auch mal die sehen und gesehen werden, Flanierlatsche ausführen. Und ja, das war das, was der Simon an Sneakern für den Urlaub eingepackt hat. Liegt ein bisschen daran, dass wir die Flüge sehr knapp gebucht hatten und zusätzliches Gepäck teuer geworden wäre. Also haben wir es ein bisschen knapper gehalten, haben halt eigentlich mehr so auf Bikinis, Badehosen und T-Shirts Wert gelegt, als jetzt noch eine halbe Sneaker-Kollektion. Nächstes Mal vielleicht ein bisschen mehr. Normalerweise gehe ich nicht ohne 3 bis 4 Paar aus dem Haus.
Kommt aber ja natürlich auch immer ein bisschen auf die Destination an, ne? Und das ist halt ein Sommerurlaub, da kann ich das schon durchaus nachvollziehen. Ich glaube, wenn du jetzt irgendwie einen Winterurlaub machen würdest, sähe es nochmal ein bisschen anders aus. Oder so ein
weniger Athleten, ja.
Ja, genau. Dementsprechend, das ist schon fair auf jeden Fall. Das ist schon fair.
In der Zwischenzeit, Amadeus, ist ja ziemlich viel passiert. Nicht nur bei mir in Sachen Entspannung, sondern auch bei dir im, sagen wir mal, am anderen Ende des Spektrums. Und du hast dich ja beruflich einmal komplett nochmal neu erfunden, richtig?
Ja, so ungefähr. Während du entspannt in der Sonne gelegen hast, habe ich entspannt in der Sonne gelegen und die ganze Zeit E-Mails geschrieben. ich habe tatsächlich nach gut 15 Jahren meiner diversen Festanstellungen, die ich so gehabt habe, mich dazu entschlossen, selbstständig zu werden. Flüge sozusagen.
Nice.
Aber
nice.
Ne, also in die Selbstständigkeit zu gehen. Ich meine, in den letzten 15 Jahren war ich trotzdem ja immer freier Redakteur. Das ist ja auch schon eine Selbstständigkeit, aber ich hatte immer diesen festen Job, meist in einer Berliner Kommunikationsagentur. Jetzt habe ich mich dazu entschlossen, komplett in die Selbstständigkeit zu gehen und bin laut Finanzamt bin ich freiberuflicher Unternehmensberater. Wenn man es cool sprechen möchte, bin ich Brand Consultant. Das passt dann auch ein bisschen mehr dazu, dass ich halt eben vor allen Dingen in dem Bereich Sneaker, Streetwear, Hip-Hop, Subkultur, Popkultur arbeite und habe auch das große Glück, direkt mit DevShop und StockX 2 recht große Kunden haben und arbeiten zu dürfen. Die haben mir diesen Start definitiv erleichtert. Ich freue mich sehr auf all das, was passieren wird und was auch schon gerade passiert. Und sollte irgendeiner der Hörer und Hörerinnen mal Interesse daran haben, in einer Berliner Kommunikations-Lifestyle-Whatsoever-Agentur anfangen zu wollen und sich nicht ganz sicher sein, ist die gut oder ist die nicht gut, gerne in meine DMs leiten. Ich bin gerne dabei zu helfen und zu sagen, die Agentur ist super oder die Agentur, wie meine letzte beispielsweise, scheiße. Also von daher fragt mich gerne, ich stehe gerne mit Rat und Tat zur Seite und wie gesagt, freue mich jetzt auf all das, was kommt. Aber ja, das ist bei mir in den letzten Wochen passiert. Ja, so ist das. Vielleicht mache ich dann aber jetzt auch mal Urlaub. Mal schauen. Wobei, nee, als Selbstständiger darf man ja keinen Urlaub mehr machen. Ne? Da ist man ja immer ständig und selbst und ach, so wie das da so heißt.
Oh, je. Ich wollte dir gerade dazu gratulieren, aber nachdem du jetzt mit selbst und ständig ankamst, Amadeus, das müssen wir dir noch austreiben. Nein, ernsthaft. Ich gratuliere dir natürlich herzlich
für
diesen Schritt. Ich habe ja auch schon ein, zwei Mal in den vergangenen Jahren gesagt, so Mensch, wieso machst du dich eigentlich nicht mal selbstständig mit dem Wissen, was du hast und dem Netzwerk, was du hast, sicherlich keine schlechte Idee. Und ich wünsche dir alles Gute für den Start und für die Zukunft, mein Freund.
Danke auch für den ganzen Support und auch die diversen Arschtritte, denn am Ende des Tages hättest du auf jeden Fall auch schon vor 1,5 Jahren recht gehabt, aber hey, manchmal braucht es halt ein bisschen länger, beziehungsweise dann den richtigen Moment, der sich richtig anfühlt, den gibt's jetzt gerade und wie gesagt, da freue ich mich sehr drauf und drüber. Kommen wir zur ersten Rubrik unserer schönen Podcast-Episode, wobei es stimmt nicht, eigentlich ist das Intro per se schon eine Rubrik. Kommen wir zur zweiten Rubrik, sagen wir es so, What's on my feet today? Und ich gehe jetzt ehrlicherweise davon aus, dass du heute was anderes getragen hast als eine Badelatsche.
Ja, ich habe endlich wieder Schuhe am Fuß und habe sehr genossen, heute ein New Balance 550 von Amy Leon dort zu tragen. Den Natural Green für mich bisher auf jeden Fall safe in den Top 3 der Schuhe des Jahres. Ganz großartiger Colorway und heute an meinem Fuß.
Geil. Du findest gut, dass du den endlich doch noch geholt hast.
Ja, hat ein paar Tage länger gedauert, wa? Aber,
War Preis okay?
War Preis okay.
Was letzte Preis war,
ich müsste lügen, 320 oder 350, also ganz leicht über Retail.
Ja, ganz leicht über Retail war auch meiner, der Nike SB Dunk Low Para Nummer 2. Ich habe es im letzten Podcast mit Fabian, mit Fabs, habe ich schon gesagt, dass ich den im Resell kaufen musste, weil mir diese nicht ganz klaren Stückzahlen für den deutschen Markt Angst gemacht haben. Ich gesagt habe, ey, bevor das in die Hose geht, kaufe ich ihn halt im Resell. Who cares? Also ich care normalerweise, aber in dem Fall war es mir wirklich egal. Er musste ran. Den habe ich heute am Fuß gehabt. Das ist ein sehr schöner Schuh. Ich bin zwar immer noch so ein bisschen in diesem, welchen finde ich eigentlich besser, den ersten oder den zweiten? Und irgendwie... Aber es ist so oder so auf jeden Fall ein sehr, sehr guter Schuh. Und könnte, ja, doch, könnte auf jeden Fall in unsere Top-Liste des Jahres rutschen.
Soweit ist ja noch nicht. Es sind noch ein paar Wochen Zeit, bis wir das Jahr abschließen.
Vor allen Dingen ein paar Wochen und auch nochmal irgendwie gefühlt 2000 Releases, die da noch anstehen. Also von daher,
ganz
ja,
genau.
Das ist eine kritische Sache. Aber ich meine, du hast gerade gesagt, bei dir schon mal Top 3, safe. Hm? Bei mir eventuell Top 5. Von daher, schauen wir mal.
Und damit starten wir rein in die 88. Episode mit dem Thema, Amadeus, How to Design a Sneaker.
Und how to become Sneaker Designer. Ne? Weil eine Frage, die sich sicherlich jeder Sneakerhead da draußen schon einmal gestellt hat, lautet, wie würde eigentlich mein ganz eigener Sneaker aussehen? Da denkt man dann meist erstmal an den Colorway, eventuell noch an Materialien und dann hier und da mal noch an ein paar Extras. Und dann ist die Idee auch meist schon wieder verworfen, denn die ID-Programme diverser Brands sind stark limitiert und die eigenen Customizing-Skills hören auch meist beim Ausmalen von ein paar Panels auf. Und da sprechen wir doch tatsächlich auch aus Erfahrung. Wie entsteht also so ein Sneaker-Design? Was braucht ein gutes Sneaker-Design und wie wird man eigentlich Sneaker-Designer? All das haben wir uns und dann jemanden gefragt, der es wissen muss. Und zwar Marshall Hook, der ist Head of Design bei Hummel und hat zuletzt an einem neuen Sneaker gearbeitet, dem Hummel Reach Marathoner. Einem spannenden Hybridkonzept, das soeben erst veröffentlicht wurde. Ein Grund mehr, mit ihm in diesem Advertorial und in freundlicher Zusammenarbeit mit Hummel zu sprechen. Daher, Marshall, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks so much for having me. It's really nice to talk to you, man.
The pleasure is on us, Marshall. First question. What kickstarted your interest in sneaker culture?
I guess I came up in, like, skateboarding was a big part of my life growing up. And, you know, as soon as you got into that, especially like in the 90s when I was growing up, I mean, it was shoes, right? That was sort of the first thing you got after your skateboard, that you would stop skating in whatever sneakers you had and find some skate shoes. And especially, you know, growing up in the suburbs of Toronto, you know, we'd have to go a long way just to find a skate shop. And even then, you wouldn't always get everything that you saw in the magazines. And you started to really covet these things. You'd see them on pros that you liked, or you'd see them on kids, like older kids skating in the city, and then get really excited about, you know, what are these, what are those? And so that was probably what got me really excited about shoes in general. I think just the rarity and seeing these things that you couldn't necessarily get your hands on. And I guess when I was getting a little bit older and then seeing older kids wearing just brands that I wasn't aware of or didn't know. And some of these niche brands like British Knights or Troop, things like that, where, you know, I mean, it's before the internet, right? So it's like, how did you even know this was cool? And then where did you find it? And it was so, like, it was fascinating, you know? And I guess it was just a moment in time, like when you're a certain age and you see kids that are a bit older that are just rocking this style that's so exciting. And then it just does something. It just hits you at the right time and the right place, I guess. And then it becomes really important and probably bigger than just the shoes. It's sort of what this represents in terms of just somebody defining themselves or expressing themselves and tapping into, does this sound like nonsense or do you know what I'm talking about? Like maybe this is personal to me.
I totally understand what you mean.
Okay.
100% my life back then. But what was the first sneaker that really got your attention or like brand wise?
Yeah, I guess there was an older kid in my school that had a pair of British Knight Kings that I just thought were amazing. Like, I'm not sure if I'd still have that opinion if I looked at a pair right now on the internet. But at the time, I just remember it just seeming like something I'd never seen before and just finding everything about it so amazing. So that was probably the pair that really, like, and it's not like I became a diehard like British Knights collector or anything like that, but that was definitely a pair of shoes that was sort of got me thinking about sneakers in a different way for the first time.
Was it this young, oh, he's cool, I like his shoes kind of thing? Or have you already had an eye on the aesthetics and the design aspects?
No, it's funny, right? Like, I think it probably was on a design level when I look back, because I did spend a lot of time thinking about this and probably spent a bit of time, like a lot of kids, just doodling sneakers and looks and stuff like that. But I didn't really think about it as that at the time. I was like, oh, I'm just doodling sneakers. I guess everybody probably does this, but,
yeah, even Virgil Abloh does that. He wrote in his book that he was doodling sneakers and sent them over to Nike. and then this happened.
Yeah. Well, his that's amazing. But I guess it's more common than I guess maybe we all do it too, or maybe just the people that are going to go in this direction. But yeah, I think there was always something, you know, in general, you anything that's a little bit different, you start thinking about, okay, why is that different? Why is that doing something for me? And I guess if you think in terms of design, yeah, I guess you just start thinking about, okay, why is that interesting? What does that mean? What's that shape about? You know, how do I copy this when I'm doing things? Or how can I mean, that's what you do when you're a kid and you're designing and sketching. You're just trying to copy other stuff you've seen, right? But
did you customize your sneakers? Because thinking of, for example, the Vans cap back in the days, mm-hmm. people started cutting them off and using duct tape to create the half cap. Was this DIY thingy a part of your way?
Yeah, I definitely did that. I had a friend of mine, he'd gone to the US with his parents on a trip and come back with this pair of Airwalk Chukka boots. And they were just these really clean, simple kind of mid-cut skate shoes. And I thought they were amazing and I couldn't find them anywhere. And I had sort of a similar pair of shoes, but they were high tops. And I was like, well, I'm gonna cut these off and make these like those. And I was cutting them off. I was painting panels so they were more color blocked. They ended up looking terrible. Like, I really regretted doing it, but I was definitely getting into that. And there was a lot of that, I think, especially when we started going from like higher top shoes and then getting into sort of mid cut and low cut shoes, that the high tops that people had, they were starting to do weird things with. And yeah, it was definitely something I did. I didn't do it very well though, I'm going to admit. Like, they were disasters.
You're from Toronto in Canada. How was the sneaker scene or the sneaker community in Canada back then in the 90s and early 2000s?
So I guess I'm not sure how much of a scene there was. I'm from the suburbs, right, where there was no sneaker scene per se, at least at the time. And I remember there was a store called Uncle Otis, and I think it's still there in Toronto.
Like a mom and pop store.
No. This was the first, this was probably in like 92, maybe 91. This was like the first real gallery style, like streetwear shop I'd ever seen.
Okay.
And it had opened up in Toronto, and it really, it blew my mind because there was brands there that we couldn't find anywhere else. And they had like, you know, Tommy Boy had a clothing line for a while, and like Stussy, which you couldn't get anywhere at the time. And going in, but it was all this sort of curated gallery style luxury streetwear boutique. And I'd never seen anything like it, you know, and obviously we were really used to that now. But at least in Toronto, we'd never seen that before. And that was sort of the first time I sort of saw this signs of what sort of ended up being more of this sneaker culture, like we've known it over the last decade. But to be honest, like, I don't know that I was really connected particularly with a sneaker scene, other than friends of mine that were just into collecting. I think by the time I left Toronto around 2009, there was a guy, Matt George, who'd started up a store called Goodfoot in Toronto, which, and probably around 2005, six, I think. If I'm not mistaken. And that was really getting into this like now real sneaker community kind of scene. And But how's the sneaker scene? I think there's other people that could answer that question in a lot more interesting way, because I definitely wasn't connected to it in like a sneaker community kind of a way.
Now, fast forward, you went to become a sneaker designer and started at Puma in 2010. What made you come to Germany and what kind of projects did you work on?
I was designing apparel for a while in Toronto. I'd actually ended up working with one of these guys that had started up that Uncle Otis store that I'd met like a lot later on, you know, when I was growing up. And so that was kind of interesting. But I'd just seen a job. I don't know why I was sort of randomly looking, but there was something for Puma. And I'd applied to it quite randomly, and it was for footwear.
Sorry, like seeing it on the internet?
Or? Yeah, I'd seen it on the internet. And I don't know how. Like, I don't even remember specifically, like, browsing jobs or anything like that. But I'd applied for it. And it was for a footwear color and material job. And just randomly, and sent my portfolio. But anyways, they'd gotten in touch with sort of no pre-screening and just saying, hey, can you come out to Germany and
really? Like sit on a plane, come over.
Yeah. Talk. Like it was which, you know, obviously Wow. Now post COVID, we don't do any of that. It's all Skype calls and whatever. But this was just an email saying, can you come and meet us? And so I went. My brother had actually lived in Munich for a few years before I went, and so I'd visited him there, and he was loving living in Germany. And
so you've been to Germany before? It was not your first time.
It wasn't my first time, no. So I went out, and yeah, it was just neat. Like, it was just cool to do something different, to sort of be part of a different vibe and just try something different than apparel design. So that's how I ended up there. And I think it's something, you know, you were talking earlier when we were chatting just before about, you know, people who are thinking about getting into this and, you know, what to do. And I think sometimes it's that easy. You know what I mean? It's just like, okay, you know, there's some stuff out there. Let's just see what's going on. And yeah, I don't know. So I'd gone out and I'd gotten started, and I'd actually ended up in the team sport team. So doing a lot of football, actually. And, you know, there was lifestyle products associated with that, but definitely a lot of football stuff as well, like on pitch technical stuff, and just working as part of that team, and which was quite interesting because it's very collaborative, a lot of investment in a football boot, putting it together and then taking it to market. So there's always a lot of cooks in that kitchen, which was really interesting for me, knowing nothing about footwear at the time, to really be around all of these, you know, really talented designers and product managers, and hearing how they solve problems and, you know, why they make the decisions they make and that kind of thing. And it was really, really cool. And then I guess I'd sort of grown into doing more design as my time at Puma went along. But it was, you know, it was mostly in the team sport universe. And I started doing more lifestyle stuff, I think, once I started freelancing after I left Puma.
You stayed at Puma for almost 7 years, if I got it right. Left the company then and started at Hummel in 2017. What was your aim? What was your plan back then?
Well, I was freelancing in Germany, and then my girlfriend had got a job at Lego, and we thought, okay, well, let's have an adventure and go to Denmark.
Great. That sounds really, really good, to be honest.
Yeah. It's that's a whole other thing, man. But yeah, it's a wild scene over there. And she was actually designing footwear as well before we came here. So she's gone into a totally different direction now. So, you know, I was freelancing for a bit, but freelancing in Nuremberg was great. I still had all my friends, you know, from Adi or Puma that, you know, I could hang out with in the evenings, and there was lots going on. Denmark's a different vibe, you know, especially in the West here. Like, we're not in Copenhagen, right? It's in a smaller city called Aarhus. And, you know, like we were saying, like, I'd always really been excited by these more niche brands, like, you know, Pony and Troop and these kind of things. I guess there was always something about those that I found really exciting. And I had a buddy actually from Adidas who had worked at Hummel before, and I was talking to him, and he'd put me in touch with someone. So I guess the original aim, I'd gone over to do footwear specifically, and it sort of went from there. So it was, at the time, it was just to get involved with a really interesting niche brand and do some footwear design.
Last year, you told Sneaker Freaker in an interview that Hummel is in the process of rediscovering as a brand. What is the status quo of Hummel right now?
Yeah, I think we're definitely still in the process of rediscovering who we are as a brand. Next year, we'll be turning 100 years old, right? It's a really old brand, and it's gone through a lot of changes. And I think for a long time, it was more of a team sport supplier and became less and less, I think, of a brand. A new CEO joined a few years ago who was really excited to get this back into being a brand and capturing some of its excitement and some of its DNA. But it's a struggle, you know. Like when I look at people I know who've gone from, say, Puma to Nike or Adidas to Puma, and it's very easy for them to slip into designing Adi shoes and then going to Puma and designing Puma shoes, because it's a moving train. You know what you're getting into. And I think Hummel has been a lot of things and been a little bit schizophrenic, say, over the last 15 years. So in the last few years, it's been trying to pull it back together and really get a sense of who we are. And which I guess we know who we are, but from a design perspective, it's a big ship to try to turn and try to start picking out, okay, these are the styles that are starting to feel right. This is working, you know. And there's obviously a commercial reality to this as well, that you can have great styles, and then if they're not working in the market, okay, maybe that's not who we're going to be yet. So let's try some other things. But I definitely think we're getting there in terms of being this, you know, underdog challenger sort of brand that's maybe a little bit more playful than the other sports brands, maybe trying to be a little bit more inclusive and just have a little bit more fun. So we're getting there, you know, but it is work to sort of really pull out, okay, what's the real Hummel, you know, of all of the layers of things that it's been in different directions. If you look through the archives, there's a time in Hummel history, probably from the early 80s to probably the late 90s, early 2000s, when it was a very interesting brand. There was a lot of stuff going on. It was quite over the top, and really had a lot of energy and excitement. And, you know, whether you'd like it or dislike it, I mean, it definitely had a point of view. You know, and I guess that's ultimately on a design level, what we're trying to get back to is like, just define that point of view in a way that makes sense for the brand and also makes sense for the consumer.
In my opinion, Hummel has a very clean approach, like this Scandinavian language, this classic Scandinavian language. Is it easier or harder for you to work with this kind of approach, or am I totally wrong and it's not the real approach?
It depends what you're looking at. Again, you know, like I've said, the brand has done a lot of things over the last while, and some of them are very clean. Some of them are probably quite over the top and quite bold. But I think the goal is to move towards a little bit more of a clean approach. And it's easier and it's harder, right? Like, it's definitely like simplicity in some ways is quite easy. There's less processes, there's less details. But then it's hard because then you really have to focus on proportion. You really have to focus on materials. You have to focus on all of the little things that, you know, make all the difference between, you know, something that's really clean and beautiful and minimal and something that's just cheap and generic, right? And sometimes it can be a really fine line. So I guess in some ways it's easy and in some ways it's a lot more difficult.
When you start working on a design, Where exactly do you start and how? Do you make a sketch with a pen on a piece of paper, or do you use other tools? What is the setup?
Probably when I started, I would do a lot more on the computer, using Illustrator and sort of blocking out the shape and then playing with details and trying a lot of iterations, you know, copying it down and trying different versions and moving things around and seeing what works. I think I've really been working on my hand sketching. I got an iPad and it's been fantastic just for sketching, because you can do it sort of anywhere. And I think that's sort of what I'm moving to now when I am doing design is sketching, because sometimes there's just a random line or something that can fly off and all of a sudden you can get quite excited about, and it's a little bit quicker just to play with little details or try little things. And especially in that sort of digital drawing space where you still have all the convenience of a computer, but then all of the freedom and sort of organic movement of drawing on paper. So yeah, that's usually where I start. And I think it seems to be the same for most designers, at least for footwear. You know, I mean, you have to visualize this stuff. I think there's a kind of apparel design where people start draping fabric on things and cutting, and it's really organic and it's really creative and exciting. And it's difficult to do with footwear because it's an object. But I guess that being said, there's definitely people and designers on our team as well that will tape up a last and start sketching right on that as a starting point, which, you know, is also, I guess, a little bit strange to me, because I find it easier to understand when I'm seeing it in two dimensions before starting to play around with that. But yeah, so for me, it would be hand sketching and just doing a lot of iterations and really keep working and just changing one little thing, and then see what comes out of that process.
What's the most important part for you in this design process? Like material-wise or like shape-wise, do you start with one specific thing and then work from there on? Or
you know, when you're doing, especially the type of work I've done, which has been a lot more commercial, there's typically a pretty well-defined brief of what the product needs to be. So sometimes it is quite specific in terms of, okay, we need something that's this material, or at least something at this price point, which is then going to determine what materials you can potentially use. You know, if they're saying, oh, okay, we need a die cut EVA, like old school runner type shoe for the assortment, or we need to replace sort of cupsole court shoe with a new style. So you're kind of starting with those basics of the brief, right? I mean, there's definitely times when designers will just come with a blue sky project and say, hey, I thought of this, like, let's do it. You know, if we're talking about the process in general, where does it start? I mean, it would typically start with this brief of, okay, what is it we need to do? What's the product? What's the problem that needs to be solved? So yeah, for me, I usually have a good idea of what the materials might be, at least on a big picture scale. Once you start sort of sketching and coming up with the final idea, then maybe you start thinking about trims and, okay, it could be interesting to, you know, have a underlay with a, you know, 3M reflective here, or have a little webbing detail here. But in general, yeah, I've got a good idea of what the materials are. So it's really just about trying to get the shape and the overall expression of the shoe right. And okay, how does this look? How does it feel? And then, you know, the materials, the colors, those usually come later on for me.
The Hummel Marathona is one of the most iconic silhouettes of the brand. The Reach is the comfy new cushioning technology. How did the idea come to life to mesh up both to create a new and hybrid sneaker, the Reach Marathona?
Well, okay, so like we talked about, in our search to rediscover ourselves as a brand, we've really been, the big conversation in the design team has been looking back on the archive, on some of the design DNA of Hummel, and looking for the elements that we can take and serve them up again in a more contemporary way. The Marathona, yeah, it's been an evergreen style. It's been the platform for a lot of really interesting collabs. Overkill, 424 have been some really nice ones. as well as a few. We've had a really nice collab with them on the Marathona as well. But at the end of the day, it is a die-cut runner. We're not necessarily known for being this heritage running brand, and there's a lot of brands that are also doing this stuff. And it's also got a bit of a quirky look to it. The overlays, the shapes, I mean, they're distinctive, but they're definitely not for everybody. We've got a very small design team in the style business unit. Martin Ann is the product manager, and Maria Olsen is the designer. And she had basically, you know, based on the conversations we'd had about trying to bring some Hummel DNA into new developments, she'd come with this idea. And it was really interesting, actually, because there's a lot of debate and discussion about any new footwear development, because they're expensive to start up. There's a lot of investment put into activating them. So you always want to try to get everything right. And then there's always compromises in terms of cost and whatever. And this was one of the projects where she'd come with essentially an initial sketch that was already so strong and so exciting, where she'd really managed to just take those elements of the Marathona that keep it looking like the Marathona, but it really does look like a completely new style as well. Doing it on the Reach outsole, this was an outsole that we'd developed for the Reach LX 6000, which was also the platform for a few nice collabs. But the idea was then to keep this outsole going and try to get it to work a little bit harder for us in the assortment, and not just stay on the one silhouette that we had.
Quite often, hybrids are looking like Frankenstein's monster, or as if someone was drunk and lazy and just put things together because why? The Reach Marathona seems to make sense. It matches heritage with contemporary design. How was the design process? You said the designer, she came up with the idea and you immediately felt it. But how did this process went on, and when was the process done?
You know, it's about 10 months or so to go from a design.
But this sounds fast.
Well, you know, it depends, right? Like, the nice thing here is, so this is a new upper, right? One of the things that takes a lot longer is when you have a new outsole, because that requires making molds. There's a lot more back and forth where you're getting prototypes made and then having to make changes and making changes on blueprints and 3D, and it's expensive and it's time consuming. When you're just doing a new upper, and I'm saying just, it still can be a lot of work, but you've already got the last, you already know the shape of the shoe, you already know what's going on, so it can be developed relatively quickly. The design process, again, sometimes, like for a football boot, you can be spending months going back and forth and people debating every little thing. This was definitely not that. And again, this was one of these styles where, you know, Maria had brought it to a design review, and everybody who saw it was right away like, okay, well, this is it. Like, this is really nice.
Nice, a sure shot.
Yeah, absolutely. No, 100%. So, you know, it was, I mean, relatively quickly sort of approved and then ready to go. But I think the whole development process for the style was about 10 months. And I think, yeah, that can be fast. It can also be slow, depending on how people are working.
We already talked about how you got into the whole design thing and what's your approach. Let's talk about your inspiration. Where do you find it? Is it something like, when I have my Sunday morning walk and then I'm gonna read a book? Or is it more like you're sitting in your office and you try to concentrate on some specific project? Where do your inspiration come from?
I'm not sure if other people would ever really have a different answer, but I think inspiration is always hitting you from everywhere, right? You can hear a piece of music or see something on TV, or, you know, just see a combination of colors in a shop window or something. Like, anything can get you excited or thinking about things just a little bit differently. I'm definitely, I've never been one of these sort of visionary designers where things come to me in my sleep or I just imagine everything, you know, like what you imagine a designer to be if you're not in design. Like that's definitely not me. Like I definitely have to work at it to do anything that's even okay.
I thought you have such a great story. Like, oh, one day I was waking up and I've got this vision in my eye.
No, I mean, and that's bad, right? Like, I don't know, maybe, like, I don't know. I've worked with so many super talented people that just, it seems so effortless for them, you know, that they always seem to be full of ideas. Like, I definitely, there's people where I also want to grab them and say, like, where is this all coming from? Like, why, how is this? But to me, it's not that interesting of an answer. It's just like you're always looking around, you're always absorbing things, right? And you're always getting inspired from different places, whether it's architecture or music or fashion or just, like you say, you see a texture or you see an angle on a, you know, a shadow or something. You're like, oh, that's kind of an interesting shape. I wonder what else that could be. So, you know, it's, it's just, I guess, a little bit of everything.
Thinking of good design, in your opinion, what are the top three best sneaker designs of all time and why?
That's a wild question, right? Because it's like you're locking this in now. I'm recording this that like I'm saying, okay, these are the three best. But I'm gonna
don't worry, Marshall. If you got if you think damn, I missed something or whatever, then we're gonna do another interview in 1 year or something like that. I ask you the same question again.
Okay, well, definitely, I'd say that the Vans Style 95, like the you know, that's probably one just because it's iconic. It's been around forever. It's hardly changed. It's been so versatile, you know, with a few different panels, people have been able to do so much with that style. It's like multi-generational. It's something you could see on some, you know, preppy banker guy in Dusseldorf or on like, you know, just like a skate kid in Berlin. Like it seems to work for a lot of different people with a lot of different vibes. And like every brand has their version of this, right? Like it's like, what would footwear look like without it, right? It's so that's one for me. That I think is amazing just because it's been so timeless and so iconic. And maybe for the same reason, the Chuck Taylor. Like I think those styles that become icons, right? That just become part of, they're not even part of a place or time anymore. They're here forever now. And we don't even think about it. Like you don't think of Vans as a shoe from the 70s, right? Like you think about that as a shoe from right now. And this style hasn't really changed that much. And I'll throw a curveball. I think the my number three would probably be, and this is maybe pretty niche, but the Airwalk Jason Lee. I don't know if you remember the style. It's
definitely.
Okay.
Definitely. I remember that.
I don't know your thoughts. It's so, if you look at it today, in a way, it looks so unsophisticated. It's a few overlays. It's this piece of suede, the gum rubber outsole. But there's something about it, I guess, that at least at the time, but even that one I have looked at recently and I'm like, no, I still really like it. It's simple. It's a shoe. It's got a design that does the job it's meant to do. And it looks great. And I think it's held up really well. Like it doesn't look like a goofy Airwalk shoe from the 90s, right? Like it's from 95, I think. And it, yeah. And I think it's still, like I'd buy another pair today if they still made them.
Totally get that. But is there a specific time period in sneaker design you really appreciate?
I think that every sort of time period in sneaker design is is inspired by the era it's in, right? So as far as like how shoes looked at a certain time, I think they always look right for the time, right? Like sneakers that come out now, I really like. And sneakers that came out 10 years ago, I liked those at the time. Looking back, I think there's styles that have aged really well and styles that haven't from every era. I think if I think about the time periods before online shopping, before there was so much like I think there was something about that time, and I don't know if it had to do with the styles themselves, but the idea that, you know, of looking at someone and, hey, where did you get those, and finding something amazing, and the fact that you really had to go out and be a part of the world to find these great objects and these great pieces, whereas now so much of it is done digitally. And I don't know. I mean, I guess people who are getting older will always say, hey, I think we've lost something from that other time when I was a kid. But so this might be like a really, really boring observation, but I feel like when it comes to things like sneakers, we did sort of lose something when you didn't have to, when you had to get out and really travel and really find something. And, you know, like when, especially in Canada in the 90s, if you had even a classmate who you weren't friends with that was going to Florida on holiday, you know, you'd get some money from your mom so that they could go and buy shoes for you in the US, where they could maybe find something that you couldn't get. And there was something really cool about that, you know, and it made what you had really special, and it made you want to take care of them more and be proud of them. And I don't
you
know.
You dig more into it.
Yeah.
You know? You dig more into it. I totally remember the day I told my parents, please bring me back a shoe when you come back from your holidays in the US. I was in sixth grade. I don't know how old you are in sixth grade, but I was really young, and they brought back a Fila Jerry Stackhouse 2. No one else got that. And I really was into this shoe because, of course, it was a gift from my parents, but they are from the US and you couldn't get them in Germany, or at least I thought you couldn't get the, couldn't get it here in Germany. And of course, I digged into them. I was checking, okay, when did Jerry Stackhouse wore them? Was there a big game he was playing? Why did Fila did the shoe? Why did they do it like this? And so on and so on. And of course, nowadays, you can look things up. You don't have to be like having weeks or months in research, stuff like that. You just can go online and check it, but you have to check it. And that's something which is really important for me, like know your history, know where the shit is coming from. If you like it, you like it. That's cool. But to understand where it's coming from and why it is like this and not like that, that's very important for me and my own heritage.
Yeah, right? Like, okay, so was the Stackhouse, was that, did you ask for that, or did your parents just happen to get you a Fila shoe that you happened to like?
They thought it looked nice, and I definitely want to have a basketball sneaker. And I don't know if it was on the shelf everywhere, or why they especially get them. I asked my mom a few months ago when we talked about like the podcast and what I'm doing and so on and so on. And I asked her, why did you choose that? And she was like, I'm not really sure. I don't know. But we thought you might like them. And yeah, they were right. I really like them. And I would like to have them right now, but they're gone.
But isn't that wild, right? Like a time when you had to depend on your mom making the right decision for you because she happened to be somewhere where she could get shoes that you couldn't.
Totally.
Now you could text her a photo and say, show this to the guy at the store. He'll know, or just buy them for me online. There is something kind of, when we talk about those eras, right? Like there was something way more special about getting those shoes than maybe anything else you got. You're waiting for them to come back. You don't know if she did something right or if she got you something weird. And then, I don't know. If we talk about eras, I do think we've maybe lost something, and then we've probably gained something else in the fact that we get exposed to so much amazing stuff, right?
Yeah, definitely. Marshall, last but not least, what's coming up next at Hummel?
Well, like I said, in 2023, this will be our 100th anniversary. So there's definitely a lot happening for that. I think 2023 is going to be our 100th anniversary, and we're really looking forward to that. And we've got a lot of exciting things coming for 23. Hummel's mantra, you know, our big vision is to change the world through sport, to really try to challenge the way things are done and really do some good in the world. So, you know, if you're saying, well, what's next from Hummel, I would really look for some more really, really exciting initiatives, some really exciting things. We're really getting involved in sport and trying to make a big change.
Marshall, that sounds awesome. Thank you that you took the time, that you give us a deep dive in your life and how to become a designer and what's going on at Hummel, and especially with the Reach Marathoner. Really appreciate it. Thank you. And I guess latest in 2023, we will talk again.
Excellent, man. Listen, it was so nice to talk to you guys. And yeah, have a great week. I don't know what thank that means. Okay.
So, thank you, Marshall. Und auch euch vielen lieben Dank, dass ihr bei der 88. Episode mit dabei wart. Ihr könnt alle Episoden wie gewohnt kostenlos auf Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Deezer, Amazon Music, Audible, Google Podcasts, Podtail, Podigy und allen anderen Streaming-Diensten hören. Und wir würden uns sehr freuen, wenn ihr dem O'Shun-Podcast und unserem News-Podcast O'News dort folgt, wo ihr Podcasts am liebsten hört. Schaut einfach auch mal auf Facebook und Instagram.com/O'Shun-Podcast vorbei und interagiert mit uns und der Community. Checkt auf jeden Fall auch die Sneakersuchmaschine Sneakerjägers und werdet Teil der Sneakerjägers Germany Community. Wir freuen uns sehr über 5 Sterne und eine positive Bewertung bei Apple Podcasts. Über 350 positive Bewertungen hat O'Shun schon und eine Rezension würden wir gerne mit euch teilen. SX Elder schrieb vor geraumer Zeit schon: Super Podcast, voll was für Sneakerliebhaber wie mich, fachlich auf ganz hohem Niveau, macht Spaß und lohnt sich zuzuhören. Vielen Dank, tut uns allen Gefallen und supportet die Podcasts und erzählt mindestens einem Freund oder einer Freundin, der sich für Sneaker und Streetwear interessiert, von uns. Show some love, Dankeschön und wir hören uns in der nächsten Episode wieder. Bis dahin, macht's gut, tschüss.
Ciao, ciao.
O'Shun, der Sneaker-Podcast mit Simon Buß und Amadeus Thüner. Alle 2 Wochen auf iTunes, Spotify und YouTube.